All right, it's 3:30. Welcome. You are at Mint Condition, teaching the virtuous circle to young people. Woohoo! And we're the group after the Saddleback guy. So this lecture is part of the youth ministry track, but we think that the information we're going to communicate this hour has to deal with more than just youth ministry. We feel like it's relevant to all church ministry, all people. But my name is Jordan Koss. I've been in student ministry for 7 years. We are currently, my wife Corey and I are currently in Campbell, California, Campbell Church of Christ. That's right in the heart of Silicon Valley. There's a handout. You'll find them at the end of each of these tables. I want everybody to grab one. This is going to serve as a specific example and application of our topic today. So one side you have a Wordle with Epic on it. That's you more left-brainers who want to take notes in a different sort of way. There's an example of a Wordle in the top right corner. But on the flip side, if you're more right-brained and you need to do something while you process information in a setting such as this, you have a little adult coloring page. And you have coloring pencils in these cups around on the tables.
Adults only. Adults only.
We have a video that we're not going to show now, but we're going to post to Instagram when the lecture is over. But if you post anything, post to Instagram with the hashtag PBL2017EPIC. That's all lowercase, PBL2017EPIC. We have a panel of youth ministers from the Bay Area. And when you think of the Bay Area, I got a nice little image here. This is where we are all from. This is where we do our ministry. Barna's got a bunch of lists, and one of those is the most post-Christian regions or cities in America. And San Francisco and the Bay Area fall around, are always in the top 10. The last one I looked at was, number 6. All right, so we do ministry in this context. It's very exciting, but it's also very challenging. All right, and we also are part of a camp team that plans a yearly summer camp that meets in Santa Cruz Mountains in Felton, California. So three of our five panelists are in that camp team, our churches are located in three of the five different areas of the Bay, the Peninsula, South Bay, and East Bay. But now I want to let the panelists introduce themselves, and we're going to start with Corey.
I am Jordan's husband. I am one of these student ministers from Campbell. Thank you. We are in the heart of the Silicon Valley, which means we are fast-paced and ever-changing, and keeping up with students is a challenge all of its own.
My name is Jacob Parnell. I'm a former youth minister at the Tri-Valley Church of Christ in Livermore, California. I've since transitioned into preaching ministry, and that's a whole other story, but it's been great to be part of this camp planning team. Lisa is my wife. Together we have done youth ministry pretty much since we were married, so 12 years in various locations. But Livermore is this fancy city that is getting ever the fancier. The average combined household income in Livermore is just shy of 100K. There's a lot of well-educated people there. There's a National Defense Laboratory. There are more than 50 individual wineries within the city limits. So it's got this very fancy reputation, and like I said, it's embracing that. Some outlet stores were put up in Livermore about 2 years ago, and they will literally ship tourists from Asia who visit San Francisco to go shopping at
premium outlets,
yeah. Gucci and Coach and Michael Kors. And that's where we live, and that's where we try to reach students for Christ.
Lisa Parnell, I'm his wife, and I studied religion here at Pepperdine and have been interested in youth and women's ministry. I went and got my master's, and we did ministry together in Pennsylvania and then in Memphis and then most recently in Livermore. And I also helped direct an annual girls' conference for 6th to 12th grade girls all over California. And so we have that. We have just had our 6th year in February. We've been doing that and been part of this camp planning team for the last 7 years.
My name is Chris Dunning. I'm the student and family minister at the Walnut Creek Church of Christ, which is also in the East Bay. Walnut Creek is kind of part of this conglomerate of four or five different towns. There's Pleasant Hill, Concord, Walnut Creek, Clayton, you know, we're all kind of bunched together. And so we have a really broad range of incomes and backgrounds. We literally have a congregation that is on the track between the two sides of town. So we do have a literal other side of the track kind of situation. And it's exciting because we have a kind of melting pot congregation as well, economically, ethnically, all around. I've been there for 2 years, and previously I was in the Houston area in Texas.
So. All right. So part of the genesis of this lecture that we have at this hour comes from last year's Pepperdine Bible Lectures, where N.T. Wright was doing those Q&A sessions for like an hour, and I went to one of those, and he's always been like one of my favorite theologians, so I was really excited about going to that Q&A session. And I had one question I wanted to ask him, like, okay, so he wrote in the book, After You Believe, about this virtuous circle that's up on the screen now. And I said, okay, I want to teach this. I have an idea. I want to teach my teens that are at our summer camp this upcoming July the virtuous circle to help develop within them their character, their virtue, to become closer to Christ-likeness or fully human or their meant condition. How do I do that? I was the first person to ask the question. And his initial reaction was looking at me like with like these like seriously surprised eyes, and then he said, "I'd wait till their 20s." All right, so everybody laughed, and that was great. But his reaction, and another story I heard from a guy that we got to be our camp speaker. He was a church planter in Santa Cruz, which is not too far away on the coast from the Silicon Valley, from Campbell. He had a friend who was a minister in Watsonville, right outside Monterey, California. And he asked N.T. Wright the same question related to his congregation. How long is it going to take me to teach them this? And N.T. Wright was basically said, about 30 years. All right? And so, but N.T. Wright's response to me kind of instilled in us more of a motivation and a challenge. Like, no, we want to try to do this because we think that we want to match this challenge with a strategy that we think that will work, that will help them help us teach them the virtuous circle. And so we went with the strategy that called EPIC. And EPIC is an acronym talked about and written about by Leonard Sweet in the book about 15 years ago called Postmodern Pilgrims. And I don't know if you've heard the author Tim Elmore, but he's the leader of the organization Growing Leaders based out of Atlanta. And he wrote this book, Generation IY, the second edition that came out a few years ago. And he kind of piggybacks off of Leonard Sweet and goes into saying, yeah, this EPIC acronym, this is really how we need to be engaging and teaching and even discipling students today because of how they learn. All right? And so he says this in his book. He says, EPIC is a strategy for gaining an audience and becoming relevant with this batch of kids. And he also says, Sweet uses EPIC as an acronym to describe how this generation learns and receives information best. They respond to information that is experiential, participatory, image-rich, and connected. All right? And at this time, I'm going to let Chris talk about the first one.
So I'm going to go ahead and take the clicker from you. When we talk about experiential, this is something that kind of immediately springs to most of our minds when we want to work with teenagers. We want to provide them with something that's going to be interactive in some way that allows them to experience something. Of course, in the Churches of Christ, we have kind of a history of not trusting experience as much as we trust study and we trust kind of thought and insight that we might gain through study. But that's not the way that kids think. That's not the way that we learn. In fact, when you think about the ways in which we learn, and I'm going to try and make sure that I bring this up, we kind of have this pyramid. And the different ways in which we process information, they're kind of built on top of one another. So up here at the top, you have verbal. And we've been really good in the Churches of Christ at doing this whole verbal thing. Where we process information verbally, we deliver it verbally. Right now, that's what I'm doing to you, is providing you with a verbal explanation of experience. Isn't this wonderful? And as you work your way down, the different types of communication, the different ways that we try to process new information, they have a more solid base down here at the bottom. If you build only on verbal, if you build only on symbols, only on visuals, you're missing out on everything down here. And so I want to focus on this like bottom third for just a minute and recognize that, you know, the camp situation in which we as a group work has a lot of trouble with the direct experiences. You know, we don't usually take kids out into the world when we're at camp. In fact, camp is kind of a situation where we are working almost entirely with contrived or dramatized experiences. A lot of times we view the idea of a contrivance as a negative sort of thing. But I want to suggest to you right now that one of the most important things that we have in youth ministry, one of the most effective tools, is communicating through contrived experiences. And I want to destigmatize contrivance, because all contrivance is a skillful, well-prepared set of experiences. It's not us trying to fool or trick someone. Instead, it's us preparing a situation that we might not be able to encounter naturally otherwise. I set a little timer for myself so that I don't steal all their time.
Exploding time.
Yeah. So I want to go ahead and I want to share with you an experience that we created at camp. There we go. Last year, our theme was I Am Batman. Lisa found this great article that kind of talked about the different villains in Batman's rogue gallery and how they represent these different isms that we encounter in our world. Moral therapeutic deism, amoralism,
consumerism,
nihilism. And so we talked about all these different characters and we talked about what it was that they represented. But talking about it, as we saw on the slide before, is not a way to build a foundation for teens. And you can throw all sorts of images at them, and images are powerful, and we'll get to that here in just a second. But you have to let them experience some of this. Now, obviously, we don't want to, you know, drag kids into nihilism and give them a real, literal, authentic experience of nihilism, but we want to give them an idea of what it looks like. And so we, as part of our camp experience, built this day that was meaningless. A lot of the things that we did had very little thought behind them. Actually, they had a tremendous amount of thought on our part, but the experience of it was kind of meaningless and pointless. We had a 22-minute free time. We had just these ridiculous things. We had small group questions that had no relation to what we were talking about that day. The speaker that got up in the morning, he intentionally made it a point to, you know, just ramble on for a little while. And so we built our day around the experience of nihilism, at least as appropriate to a middle schooler or high schooler. And we ended the day with our final meal for the day as Spaglovi. So we gave them spaghetti and meatballs, and we had them wear these rubber gloves, and they got to experience the frustration and futility of eating a spaghetti dinner with nothing but their hands. I still talk to some of my middle schoolers who were there for camp, and they can explain to me what nihilism is based on the experience of the day that we created. If I had asked them, you know, after giving them a lecture on nihilism, they probably would have, you know, rolled their eyes at me and looked blankly for a little while. But the experience is what they built the foundation of their understanding of nihilism on. And my timer just went up.
All right. Okay. So,
just advance.
Okay. So mine is the P. Mine's participatory. And the generation now is so used to interacting with their environment in a way that we didn't really have as much growing up. We are doing it now. Like, how many of you can't just eat a fancy dinner without taking a picture of it first and putting it on Facebook? Like, teens today, they interact with their entertainment. They interact with the news. There are live tweets on news programs now. They get to vote for their favorite American idol. They get to play video games online with people across the world from them. They're constantly interacting with their world through social media. And so they no longer just are content to sit back and receive information the same way we did. They don't take authority figures and teachers and adults as people that they can just sit and listen to and trust. And you have all the wisdom and I need to learn from you. That is not their mentality, as frustrating as that can be sometimes. They need to participate in gaining that information themselves, because the information is so prevalent that they can just go Google whatever. I don't have to trust my teacher. I don't have to trust the encyclopedia. I can go tweet somebody or put it on Facebook or, you know, look on Wikipedia or whatever, they're so participatory that meaning needs to be participatory too. And so we kind of redid how we structured camp. We used to, you know, find a passage or a theme that we really wanted to focus on and say, okay, let's break it down into the 5 days of camp, just into manageable nuggets. Well, we decided we want to go away with that idea and do more of a journey. We want to take them on a journey. We want to invite them to come along to an experience that builds towards something. So every day builds on the day before, and it has a goal at the end that we want to send them off with. And they have come along on the journey with us, and they are discovering the meaning for themselves rather than just receiving the meaning we want to give them. And part of that is literally taking them sometimes on to different places around camp than we normally use, rather than just teaching in the amphitheater, which we still do sometimes. We started teaching in different areas of camp. I don't know if you can see the pictures, but we literally travel with the students to different parts of camp and let them hear things in a new way and participate in the message in that way. Our camp theme 2 years ago was Come and See, about the life of Jesus. And we gave them a physical invitation on their beds that first night that said, you know, I'm Jesus and I want to experience this week with you. Come and see what I'm like. Come and hear my teachings. And we had our speaker be Jesus. Instead of saying, here's a bunch of stuff about Jesus, he just said the words of Jesus from Scripture. And they got to experience it in a very personal way. I also have a fun little triangle pyramid. So much of what the way we used to teach and learn is very passive. It's like he's saying, it's reading, it's listening. Even if we use multimedia like we're doing now, we're getting farther into a retention level, but you only retain anywhere from 10 to 50% of what you see and hear. But once you start getting interactive with it, once you start participating in it, once you start doing games and dramatizations, when you get to be part of a discussion, when you get to teach yourself, your retention goes from 50 to 95% of the information that you're doing. So we wanted to offer that at camp, and camp is an awesome place to do that. And so that's not my slide at all. Okay. We started taking them on prayer trails. We developed this idea, when teens pray, we don't want it to just be this passive thing, something that's very static. We wanted it to be a little more dynamic, a little more interactive. So we take them on parts of the camp that they haven't been to, and they follow these signs where it's God speaking to them and asking them questions and responding with Scripture. And so they walk by themselves and have this conversation with God that's very participatory. We had these rotations where we gave each cabin different parables or sections of Scripture and had them teach the other cabins. We called it a you teach rotation. So you learn so much more when you become the teacher rather than the student. And then we have what we call encounters, which are physical activities with a spiritual meaning. So you can do any sort of group game, which are great at camp, and they're kind of a staple of camp, but they've become much more intentional. And instead of even saying, we did this game so you could learn this one thing, we sit them down and we say, how was what you did in any way like your spiritual life? In any way like being a Christian, or any way like what you've been learning this week? And we let them participate in making the meaning. What did you get out of this? Oh, well, we did this and it's kind of like this. Or, well, this reminded me of this, it can do, you know, and they all of a sudden start making these connections, and it's so cool to see what they come up with when they get to make the meaning, and then now all of a sudden there's 100 different meanings rather than just one. And not only are they participating in making the meaning, but we have now given them some tools. They're now being trained to look at all of life, even life that seems completely unconnected to spirituality. They're looking through it through spiritual lenses, and we're giving them a language to say, here is how God is at work, or here is what God can be doing in this part of my life that it seems like, you know, nothing's happening, but here's what I can be learning and how I can connect it to Scripture.
Well said. The IY generation is image rich. In this section, hopefully I do more image showing than talking, so you guys can hold me accountable to that. Not off to a great start so far. But to piggyback off of Lisa's P, participatory, I want you guys to participate in this first section. I'm going to show you an image on the screen, and as soon as you know what it is, just say what it is, as soon as you recognize it. Ready? What is this?
Twitter.
Okay. Okay. What about this? Okay, moving on. Good job. Okay, there were no letters involved. There were no words involved in that. All you saw were images. And this is an example to show that images are powerful, and they kind of tell a story all by themselves without using words, without using sentences. They convey a feeling. Leonard Sweet, in a book that Jordan referenced, Postmodern Pilgrims, says that images generate emotions and that people will respond with their feelings. And if you think about this generation we're trying to reach, think of a middle schooler. Images, check. Emotions, check. A lot of this is just trying to speak their language. It's like if you were communicating with someone who speaks only Chinese. You can get by pretty well, but if you learned a little bit of Chinese, you could go a lot further. But even without words and even without the language, images can go a long way. In the Tim Elmore book, he gives a couple statistics, which won't mean a lot in an image presentation section, but he says that 400%, you're more 400% more likely to learn something if there's an image involved, something that somebody's trying to teach you. And in this statistic, I don't know how you can substantiate this, but he says your brain is 60,000 more times, you recognize an image 60,000 times faster than you recognize a word. Isn't that interesting? And this is left brain talk that I'm doing right now. You may not remember these statistics, so let me use an image to help describe it. You are this much more likely to remember information if an image involved.
For those of you listening online, he's holding his hands.
Right. Images are important, and you probably already know this, but we try to be intentional at camp when we use images to communicate spiritual truths to students. Like, for example, the Apple Store. It doesn't say Apple Store on the sign. It's the Apple logo, and everybody knows what it is without having to use the left brain aspect. Okay. A triquetra. We used this at camp. We had students make a mosaic of a triquetra. If you're not familiar with that, it's the symbol for the Trinity. It's three lines that go swoop, 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 Father, Son, and Spirit, and these three distinct sections, but they all kind of flow together. So it's this great image to help us understand and communicate this idea of the Trinity. So not only do we have students learn about what this is, but they created this. They worked together in groups, and they smashed these ceramic tiles, built this mosaic together as groups. I'm wearing a shirt from a camp we did in 2012 called Connect, where we tried to communicate them the truths in the book of James. And all week head, heart, hands was our thing to communicate the theme verse in James, where do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, but do what it says. And so this was part of our camp backdrop. This was our T-shirt. And then we had this greeting that we did all week long. And we would say, learn it. So you do this with me. Learn it. That's the head. You got to say learn it, too. Learn it.
Learn it.
Love it.
Love it.
Live it.
Live it.
Turn to somebody and do that. Learn it.
Learn it.
Learn it.
Love it.
Live it. One more time.
Learn it. Learn it. Learn it. Love it. Live it.
Congratulations. That is the book of James. And we taught it to teenagers that quickly and that effectively, and they still remember this. Head, heart, hands. One more thing that we did at the Come and See camp, where we did the whole life of Jesus in 1 week, is we sent students in their cabins out with their counselors' smartphones, and we said, we want you to film a parable in the life of Jesus. This is a way to use image there, because they got to... my video's not playing. I don't know. Go click the video if you want to see images of this. But we sent them out. We gave them each a parable, and we said, okay, learn the parable, write a skit for it, and film it. Like, use creativity. These are just some clips from these parable videos that the students shot. They had a great time with this. They spent like 4 to 6 hours throughout the week filming these videos. You may not be able to tell by the production quality that they put out. But they went and they filmed it, and then we had a film festival one evening, and it was a hit. They loved it. They loved seeing themselves. They loved using images to tell a story because they're image rich.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about Connect. Connected. So what I want to do is I want to break down the word connected and redefine it a little bit here. Jordan, I think you're...
I'm in the way.
Okay, so connected is really, it's two parts put together, and it creates this brand new word called connexity. And Leonard Sweet really, really emphasizes this in his connected part, is that for the generation IY, being connected has changed. For my generation, being an older millennial, it was hanging out, it's having coffee, but there's a different element that comes into play with Generation IY. So connected is really, think of it more in terms of technology. How does technology pair with community? And then we fight the challenge of how do we bring that to life in a camp where they're not allowed to use their cell phones? That is a big challenge. So we take the social media aspect out of it just a little bit, and we drive them towards, okay, you're in a generation where for the first time ever, you get to choose your own community. Your community is not bound by geography. It's not bound by family relationships or just proximity in general. You can go on the interwebs and choose whatever community you want to be a part of. How do we break that mold if I'm only going to be in community with my preference at camp? Well, this is how we chose to do it last year. So they arrive Sunday afternoon at camp, and they're put into small groups that we pre-plan. So they're age mixed, gender mixed, and their small group leaders are gender mixed as well, from different churches. So they're not even from the same region. So we put them in small groups, and then we figure out, okay, how do we accelerate the connectedness of community without using something like social media or common interest? We create a common experience. So during the I Am Batman camp, we gave them a pile of junk to choose. It was black Bisqueen, it was pallets, it was whatever we could find in the junkyard of our camp, and we put them into 8 different piles and said, choose, here's your preset location. They spent an hour and a half building their bat caves, which is their home base. It's their common safe haven. And the really interesting thing that happens when they build these bat caves is talents come out. Spiritual gifts come out. Okay, how we connect with other people becomes apparent on the forefront with a common experience. And it becomes their place to have small group activity for the rest of the week. It becomes home. It becomes their debrief time. But that common experience accelerates that sense of community. So we want to establish community at camp, but what happens when they graduate? What do we do with that? And how do we take camp from being, hey, it's all about me, consumer mentality, to, wait a minute, my faith is not consumption, my faith is contribution. So we've got programs that run like this called J.Crew and Crew. That is one of my most challenging students for me personally. And I invest in her greatly, but the best moments I have with her are when we're working together at camp. She is making buttons here for our I Am Batman camp. Don't encourage you guys. So Jordan's going to hold up a couple of the batons so you can see them. She had to make 780 of these along with Lisa. Lisa was a part of this as well. Okay? And she is not someone who is, how do I say in the nicest terms, organically obedient. She's someone who really needs to be coached and really needs to know why. But J.Crew and Crew are designed for student participation in leadership roles, but not where they're on stage and getting all the glory, but where they're behind the scenes and setting everything up with a service mentality. So Crew is the group of college students, young adults, and older adults that are the behind-the-scenes efforts of our high school camp. J.Crew are our high schoolers that are behind-the-scenes efforts of our middle school camp. So it's taking that idea of community and extending it as far as we can, not breaking those relationships. One of the biggest things that our students are, I don't want to say struggling with, but are working their way through, especially at this age stage, is identity. Who am I? How do I serve? Why am I made this way? So our preaching minister, Shane, got me absolutely addicted to the Enneagram. It is my guilty pleasure right now. Okay. what we're going to be doing this summer at camp, don't tell any students that you know that go to our camp, is we're going to be having our high schoolers take the Enneagram. Because what the Enneagram is it's a personality typing system. And as you can see, there's 9 different personality types, but there's lines that connect them. And what it does is it expresses, this is who you are. This is who you are innately made to be in the image of God. And then this is how you connect to the community around you. So it's taking that idea of community, and it's talking about their spiritual gifts according to who they're naturally made to be, not to what we expect leaders to be. And they're going to spend a day with just their number type, getting to know who those people are that they connect with automatically. And then they're going to spend some days with the number type that is difficult to connect with. And how do I grow in that? And then where's my place in the body? So taking that idea of community and fleshing it out for them individually as a piece of the pie, but then reflecting on the whole pie and where do I fit in? So because we do not have cell phones active at camp, I'm going to come back to Jordan and I's personal ministry at Campbell to talk about how to create a social media platform that will create community for any ministry that you're involved in. So we actually, you know what, let's do this first. These are the top 14 apps. As we get into the social media side of it, you're going to see that as of January 2017, Business Insider identified these as the top 14 apps. Here's the big change. YouTube dropped off the list. YouTube is down at number 6 right now, and Spotify has creeped up to number 4. Does anybody know the biggest difference between Pandora and Spotify? They're both music apps.
You can share.
You can create a community. So Jordan and I are like super old and lame. He likes 80s music. That's the
Hey, Phil Collins is my guilty pleasure, huh?
So super old and lame. Oh,
man. Wish he was kidding. So what we had two of our seniors come up to us and be like, this has got to change, man. This has got to change. And we said, okay, let's engage with each other on Spotify. We have a shared playlist with 4 of our students that are trending towards leadership. And they contribute to the playlist, and we do too. And it's created a common ground with some students that we've had some bumps in the road with to be able to pour into youth ministry, but in the way that they love, that has to do with a platform that they're already on. So for Jordan and I, we choose not to engage in Snapchat because of the origins of Snapchat and some of the liabilities that go along with that. But we engage with our students heavily in Instagram and in Twitter. The next thing I want to show you is how quickly these social media platforms can shift in the eyes and lives of teenagers. So this is old. This is ancient because this is 2.5 years old. Okay? So in spring 2014, I want you to look at Facebook, which is your third set of bars, and I want you to see that for 23% of teens, it was the number one app that they would access for social media. And within a 12-month time span, look at the drop. A third of students that were engaged in Facebook completely disengaged from it, and look at the rise of Snapchat. That's how quickly this landscape can change. And if you're sitting there and you're going, oh man, how in the world am I going to catch up with social media because I'm still Facebook 100% of the time and students are not, Business Insider is a wonderful resource. They do a ton of studies on this, and it's super easy to get a hold of what teens are into right now. So on that note, Jordan and I felt called to challenge our students within our Campbell context to look a little bit outside of our local region and get more engaged with global missions to kind of leverage their sense of adventure and add mission to it. So we chose Lent as an opportunity leading up to Easter to get them on a missional prayer track. And we thought about it and we're like, man, how are we going to get prayers out to them? Yeah, we could hand them a handout on Sunday, but how do I become a voice in their ear every day? So we asked them, what is the method you would like us to communicate a daily prayer to you? The bulk of them said Instagram, and then right below that was personal text messages. So what we did, partnering off ImageRich, is we created these images, and they're different for every day. We created powerful images that connect with the prayer that goes with it. And we sent them out, I sent them out, and it was burdensome, individual texts to 61 teens every single day. It was a 45-minute process, guys. A lot of copying and pasting, not going to lie. But here's the deal. They want to be a part of a community that's on a platform that they engage in, but they want an individual piece of it. So all 61 got the same message, but it was a personal text message that engaged in a personal way, that they were a part of a bigger pie. They all want to be a part of the same crust, but they want you to acknowledge their different filling. They want you to acknowledge that they're not all pecan and they're not all rhubarb, that they're different. We concluded it with wanting to connect them to something larger of who our community is. So we ended, Chris, can you duck for me? Thanks. We ended with these "you are" statements. And they're character statements. So I'll go back to the first one. So the character one is "you are devoted." And then the next one is "you are loved." And then the last one is "you are courageous." "You are enough." This image is not mine. This image was one of the teens who's a little fringy, okay? And I said, you know what? I need an image for strength, and I don't want to be biased on this. You pick it. And this is the image she sent me. Super cute, right? Never would have found that on my own. Okay, but what this is engages them in is a greater purpose on their current platform. So I'm going to be meaner than the rest of them, and I'm going to issue you a challenge. If your youth ministry or your church does not have a social media account, you're missing out on being a voice in their ear in ways that are much louder than Sunday morning. Because they know if they go to my Instagram page, they're going to see 40 of these with pictures of my kids splattered in between. But they're going to see 40 of these. They know me better because of my Instagram page than they ever will in passing on a Sunday morning. So if you're not engaging in that, I challenge you that this is the time. And it's free.
All right, so EPIC is a strategy that matches the challenge that is trying to teach the virtuous circle to teens in a week of camp. But it's more so than that. It's a strategy that meets the challenge of trying to disciple teens in our culture today, whether in the Bay Area or wherever you're at across the country, to try to get them closer to that mint condition of being Christ-like, to being fully human. All right. But right now, we want to tackle a few questions, and one of those is this. We've heard it said, why can't Sunday be like camp? And another thing that we've heard said is, camp can be more effective than a year full of Sundays. And I want to pose these questions to these panelists, like, is this true? Do you think this is true or not? And then why?
Well, I'd like to start by saying I don't think it's true. I think in a lot of our churches, the practical statement is it's true because our youth ministries don't look a lot like what we do at camp. But I don't think it's true that it. I don't think it has to be true. So I'll leave it there before we
okay.
get to the
somebody
last
else.
Question.
I think camp offers a unique experience of having 24/7 time for a week, and you can do so much more in that, especially when they're unplugged from everything else and you have their undivided attention for 7 days. That's really powerful. But we can take some of the mentalities of what we do with camp and apply it throughout the year, I think, in a way that's incredibly effective. Like we meet once a month all year round to plan 2 weeks of camp in the summer. We meet for 12 months to plan and then to debrief. And I think that kind of intentionality can translate. Not that it'll take you a year to plan every Sunday morning class. That's kind of not possible, really. But Jacob and I have always taken, you know, a few days, taken a little sabbatical, taken a little retreat, and thought about our calendar year from September to summer. So September to August, we will plan, what is our theme for the year? And we're going to have a focus for the year, and we have that journey mentality of we're going to take our students on a journey this year. We really want to focus on whatever it is, student leadership or evangelism or going deeper in your faith, owning your faith. And so every class we teach, every quarter, every event that we do, the service projects we do, all lead and build on that theme so that you are taking them on a journey and they're going somewhere intentional. And so I would encourage you guys to kind of keep that sort of mentality of being intentional and then being, take the EPIC principles and pull one or two into each class. And it doesn't have to be the same ones each time. You can't necessarily be all four parts of EPIC in a 45 minutes to an hour class, but you can take one or two and engage them and then build on that. Like you said, think long term and think of a journey.
All right. That leads into our next question. How do you, or can you feed the EPIC strategy into your current youth ministry and church context throughout the rest of the year? I don't know, Jacob or Corey, if you have something to speak into that.
Yeah, just real quickly, I'll say now that I am not a youth minister anymore, I'm more of a preaching minister, this is a great challenge for me, realizing I'm speaking to adults, but I'm also speaking to the same teenagers that are in our youth groups. And if I am only using my words, like I talked about, image-rich, if I'm not using images, and image is not just visual images, you can extend that to metaphor and, you know, examples and stories that Jesus certainly used in his ministry. It's just a matter of being reminded. This is a great acronym because I can say, is this sermon experiential, or are you just sitting still while I'm pouring information into your head? But it's just good kind of a touch point to go back and say, it doesn't take much to create an experiential element within your typical teaching time or to include an image where you normally would not have had one. So yeah. Just some good reminders.
Abandon the idea of lecture. Absolutely abandon it. Make it not an option in class. It's off the whiteboard. And it allows space for you to put more things on the whiteboard, because if you were to ask any of us, we're automatically going to lean towards lecture style because we can talk your ear off. And it's okay, but that does not guarantee retention. And then the next thing I would say is surround yourself with a team that can keep you accountable for that. So that when you're in a rushed week and you can't pull off class without sitting up there and just lecturing the entire time, surround yourself with people that have creative ideas, that think outside the box, and maybe have no involvement in current ministries and can show you a fresher perspective.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Chris.
Really quick. So Lisa had brought up the idea, you know, we do a retreat in January every year with our group. We spend an entire weekend, really a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday sort of thing, just talking about what camp is going to look like. I do that for my youth ministry. I know they were just saying that they do as well. A lot of times in youth ministry, we fall into the trap of doing like spaghetti youth ministry, where we throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And we don't intentionally forecast, like, this is where I want to be next year. If you haven't read the book, Sustainable Youth Ministry, I would encourage you to do that, because it's really strong on the idea that you are trying to build towards something all the time, but you are trying to build something that can be repeatable, too, for other people that come in after you. You are not going to be in your ministry position forever, and you want to have a structure and bones in place. And someone may come along and, you know, wipe it all out and do something new, but the people that are there are going to carry it on. And so you want to be intentional. You want to have a map that you've built out. You're saying, this is where we're trying to arrive. And you do that for a year. You do it for, you know, 2 years. You do it for 3 years. And you say, you know, this is where I want to be at the end of this year. And then at the end of that year, you reevaluate and you say, did we arrive there? And am I on track to get where my 3-year goal is or my 4-year goal is? And it sounds ambitious, but if you sit down for 48 hours and you get your team of, youth volunteers, or even just you and your elders, or you and your co-minister, or you and your spouse, and you vision out what it is that you want to do, you can be intentional about this kind of thing in the way that we are about camp. And that's the biggest part of it, is being intentional and saying, I'm not going to just, you know, 2 months in advance say, well, now I'm going to plan out January. Now I'm going to plan out February. Now, you lose the cohesion that we get with camp experience, where we can say, we know what starts on Sunday and we know where it ends on Saturday. And I'm going to build an experience that gives them that. We have to do the same thing with our entire youth ministry calendar. And we can't just plan 2 days ahead or 3 days ahead. If you're in that habit, like I was at one point, get out of it and start planning much further in advance. And it will actually decrease the stress and work that you experience on a daily basis to know where you want to be in 6 months or a year.
Cool. Yeah. All right.
Well, we wanted to do an activity to put EPIC into practice before this lecture was over, but we're almost out of time. So here is some homework for you to do. I want you to videotape yourself giving the answer to this question and posting it to Instagram with that hashtag PBL2017EPIC. So that's your homework assignment. And by the end of it, if all of you do that, we'll have a wealth, a little collection of ideas, your best ideas of how to these experiences to reach left brain and right brain students that everybody can go onto social media and access and take the ones that you like and apply them in your context. We wanted to leave some space for some Q&A at the end, so you guys can take your seats again. And I don't know if there's a there's a list of resources, but at this time, are there any questions that you guys have you'd like to ask some of the panelists before we're done?
Go back to that last.
Go back. Okay, sorry. What's your most successful experience that you've crafted in your ministry that impacted both right brain and left brain young people? That's your homework assignment. So any questions before we finish off with prayer? Yes?
Two really quick ones, maybe more practical. So I've got a smaller youth group, and I'm wondering, just with Instagram, do you use, like, your own personal account, or did you create, like, a youth group account?
So I use my own personal account, and I post you things on it. Our Twitter account is just a youth group account.
Okay.
But I use hashtags.
Yeah,
so, like, our student ministry is called The Zone. So we have Zone StuMin, student ministry, as our hashtag. So they can search the hashtag and find everything they need.
Justin here, I know because I follow him on Instagram. He has his own, this is the Tri-Valley Youth Group Twitter or Instagram account. I've had one, and I just never used it, and I've kind of been inspired to do it because he's doing it, and I'm like, his kids are responding to it. So I think there's a lot of benefit for me looking at it now and saying having this separate account is good because then my kids don't get burnt out on seeing my children posted on Instagram 5, 6, 7 times a day. And if they want, they can, you know, mute my Instagram feed and go to the youth group Instagram feed.
So. Did you have a follow-up?
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have a question before we finish up? Yeah. Kyle.
Just in practical terms on that, how do you have, like, a calendar day where you say, okay, today I'm going to make sure I Instagram or this is my hour? Like, how do you keep that regular? Because I think that's always been my struggle is, I'm so tired of getting on Instagram and posting.
If I can answer, I have a communication calendar that works 6 to 3 weeks in advance of our actual youth calendar. So I have alarms that go off in our Google calendar that we share that say, okay, you're 3 weeks out, you need to Instagram post this. You're 10 days out, you need to Instagram post. You're 3 days out, you need to Instagram post. So we created a completely separate calendar for that communication. Otherwise, it becomes a drag and a pain. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just to follow up on that, something called Hootsuite, I don't know if you use it, but you can plan out well in advance, and you wouldn't have to set alarms. You can be really diligent and do it for months in advance, and it automatically will post for you.
What is that called?
Hootsuite.
How do you spell that?
H-O-O-T.
H-O-O-T, and suite, like your room suite.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Is there, there's a free version of Hootsuite, right? And then there's also like a corporate paid version, but the free one's usually enough for youth groups and stuff.
All right. Last question? Okay. Yes.
What's the best way for you to, you talked about getting people involved to help you with the planning and what's the best way to do that? Because I feel like I've hit dead end trying to get parents involved, trying to get other people involved. How do you get them excited about youth ministry, even half as excited as you are?
Let me start, and this is not my thought or my wisdom or anything I've done, but if you're familiar with Kenny and L. Campbell, who do Stuff You Can Use, and a podcast called Youth Ministry Answers, I think 2 episodes ago, their entire hour-long podcast was about their approach to growing their volunteer base. And the podcast is called Youth Ministry Answers, and they're kind of on a kick right now, growing, you know, different aspects of your ministry, growing your volunteer base, growing your teens spiritually, growing your parent involvement. And so I would turn you there, but if someone else has an immediate answer.
I just briefly would say, Lisa talked about how we plan a theme for every year. We said, like, what's our theme going to be? 1 year was student evangelism. I forget some of the other ones. But the very first year, that our theme was adult volunteers, because we came into this ministry that we inherited, and we went, like, everybody went, great, we just hired these new youth ministers. We're out because we're tired and we're exhausted. And that might be part of what you're experiencing. So some of it was, I mean, we continued to build relationships with students, but we said, like, this is a need, and this is a foundation we need to build on. We're not going to be able to do the later on things without building this foundation. So that's what we did. And you may be saying, well, that's what I'm trying, and it's not working, so I have a practical solution. But I tell you that to say it's super important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we start every year, since we've created our theme, with a youth kickoff that we invite all the parents and all the interested volunteers to come and say, here's what our theme is, here's what our classes are going to be, here's what our events are going to be, and here's why we need you, and the things that you can sign up for now and put on your calendar now to be involved in. If you just want to be involved in these events, mark it in your calendar now. But we need weekly people to invest in the lives of students, and there were times when we took the students out and gave them their own activity, and we just talked to the parents and the volunteers and said, here's why you're necessary. Like, we cannot do this job by ourselves, and we will not be effective if it's just us, but you guys have such a greater impact in the lives of students than you realize. And so much of the retention rate of students' faith statistically comes from parents and adults who have invested in them. And so if you give them the reason and the motivation and that personal kind of invitation to participate, that helped us.
Yeah. And Justin came across this thing called Cancel the Youth Group. You might want to talk to him about that. It's a way of saying, like, this is just something that's only focused for parents and volunteers.
Yeah. We are out of time, and we thank you for your patience, but we want to end in prayer. If you want to contact any one of us, these are our emails. So let's end in prayer right now. If you want the slide presentation, obviously just email one of us, and we can get that to you. Well, let's pray now, then we'll go. Father, we thank you for this hour where we just talked about EPIC, and Father, how to disciple and bring students and teenagers closer to your meant condition for all of us, which is like your Son, Jesus Christ. It's hard. It's hard to bring adults on board. It's hard to get into the lives of teenagers who are so busy these days. But Father, give us the determination. Give us the wisdom. Father, give us the vision for how to go about tackling this huge responsibility you've given us, but you've empowered us to do with your Spirit. Father, that's our prayer in your Son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for coming.
Free stuff also. We have some shirts or buttons or wristbands from camp. Come up and get it.
Next. So wow.